Don't waste a second coding yet another login registration system. Use Product Structure to dynamically provide your site with turnkey solutions for user engagement, all through a single line of JavaScript. From registration to importing contacts to inviting friends, our products come with a built-in A/B testing engine to ensure you have the best methods to manage your users. Product Structure. Focus on your core application and let us serve you the rest.
Hello and welcome to episode number 16 of the Mostly Erlang podcast. Today we are joined by Casas Sigonis of Uppsala University, and we are going to talk about types and dialyzer and lots of other cool tools.
Yes, my name is Kostis Sagonas. I am an academic. I work mostly at Uppsala University. For a number of years now, I had also a position at the National Technical University of Athens. And I have experience in Erlang since 1999. And I think I'm responsible for some of the tools that Erlang infrastructure has these days.
We are also joined by Brian Hunter.
Hello, I'm Brian Hunter. I'm out of Nashville, Tennessee, with Firefly Logic, and Zach has me on here pretty often.
Yeah, Brian's one of our regulars, occasional guest host, normal contributor, all-around great guy. So, dialyzer, can you give us the rundown on what it is, why we'd use it, and what do we use it for?
Dialyzer stands for a discrepancy analyzer of Erlang programs. It's a static analysis tool, meaning that it takes your code and analyzes it and tries to find discrepancies in the code. Discrepancies are places in the code where something is not right, if not plainly wrong. It's typically places where bugs tend to creep in. Something doesn't fit with the rest of the code base. So a particular type of discrepancies that dialyzer is pretty good at detecting is type errors. You are, for example, calling a function with a subtype that the function doesn't accept at all. So this is a place where something is probably wrong in your code base. Since the Erlang compiler does not check for type errors, dialyzer has a place in the development of Erlang code, Erlang programs, I think, in finding things where places where things might be wrong. Now, the dialyzer doesn't only find type errors; it finds other things that might be not right in your code base, like, for example, places where clauses will definitely not match, case statements that are or statements that are unreachable in general, some limited forms of race conditions if you enable the appropriate option. So it's a general static analyzer of Erlang code and flags places where something is not right.
I should warn people, the first couple times you run it on your code base, it probably will hurt your feelings. It'll tell you all the things you did wrong.
I mean, one of the first things, I guess, is the first time you run it on your code base, you'll realize that you need to do some front-up things, like with the PLT files. Could you give people a rundown of that process? Like, I think every time when people first jump in, they're like, okay, what is this, and what is this big, long step I'm doing right now, and is this every time, you know, and what all is going on? Just that setup stage would be interesting to hear.
This is a very good question. And the reason, first of all, why people need to do that sort of thing is because there is no such thing as the standard Erlang distribution. People in real life have their favorite Erlang setup, where they, besides the Erlang OTP system, they also have a bunch of libraries out there that they are using on a regular basis. So the PLT stands for Persistent Lookup Table. So this is a table that keeps information about applications or libraries that you use in your code base, but you typically don't want to analyze every time. So in order for Dialyzer to find discrepancies, it needs to first build information about a particular version of libraries that you are using. So for example, from standard lib functions. You need to run it once on standard lib or kernel or whichever other applications you are using in your code base. And this will cache in a file in your home directory the information of all the libraries you are interested in. So this is something you do once, and provided you don't change libraries afterwards, provided you don't take a newer version of standard lib or an older version of standard lib for that matter, this will be done once and you are done with this.
You can also put it, like, give it a specific file and put it in your home directory, which is useful.
You can give any file that you typically don't change.
Right. So maybe have several projects that between them have different versions of, you know, if you have, I don't know, two different projects that are using different versions of the Moki Web library, you might want to do that.
Right.
And that's just
why it doesn't come pre-built with the Erlang OTP system, because people really mix and match. I mean, if you look at how the OTP system is structured, you can actually get standard lib whatever version, and then amnesia from some other OTP version, and can use them in your code base for whatever reason.
Would you have to have the actual source, or is it okay with just the beam file when it's building the PLTs?
As a matter of fact, Dialyzer does its analysis at the level of the core Erlang.
Okay.
So provided you have beam files with debug info, that's enough for Dialyzer.
Okay.
You have to have the debug info.
Which is also nice if you have a beam file that didn't originate with an Erl file. It should still, I presume, work as long as it has debug info. But if you're using Elixir or some of the other tools.
Joxa.
Yeah.
Anything that actually debug info in it, Dialyzer handles it very nicely. So you don't really need source files.
Cool.
But you do need effectively the source in the form of Core Erlang.
Now, one of the things that I think is a big surprise when people come in and they're just creating their first set of specs around things and it passes. And they're like, why did it pass? That should break. The sort of optimistic side of Dialyzer. Could you talk a bit about that? Because I think that that's one that people coming from normal testing other direction.
Right. So this is something I should have mentioned perhaps a bit before. It was on my mind to mention. So Dialyzer is a static analysis tool that aims for no false positives. So a slogan that I like telling people is that Dialyzer is never wrong. And it's true. So whenever Dialyzer is wrong, it has a bug. But bugs aside, Dialyzer, whatever it tells you, is something that you should take action and fix, because it's never wrong. So because Dialyzer aims for no false positives, it does not find all the bugs. The guarantee you have from dialyzer that if it tells you that something is a discrepancy, it's really a true discrepancy. It's not necessarily a bug. It might be in a place in your code that is unreachable, for example. It will never be executed. Or it might just tell you that a particular clause will not match, which for all intents and purposes, it's not an error. But it's something that I think you should fix. People rarely put, and unless you get paid by the lines of code you are writing, people rarely put dead code in their code base for a purpose.
You've got the wrong language. If you're getting paid by the lines of code, pick something other than a functional language, right?
Pick Java.
Pick Java.
Right.
But let's assume that, you know, there is it's a weighted pay based on, you know, you have a different number of, you have a different money per line of Erlang code than lines of Java code. So, because, as I was saying, because the dialyzer aims for no false positives, it doesn't find all the possible errors, all the possible discrepancies. So whenever you put a spec, it's not guaranteed that the dialyzer will find discrepancies between your code base and your specs. Also, there is a fundamental reason. We want the specs to have more information than what the code has.
Okay.
I can give you a typical example of this. So in Erlang, the append function, you can actually use it with a proper list in its first argument, and then say an improper list in its second argument, or even a number, even 3.14, you can put in the second argument. So you can call append with the empty list and 3.14, and this will happily return 3.14 in Erlang. So the so-called success typing for the append function is that it takes a proper list of some terms, any term in its second argument, and it returns any term. Right? Hmm. Now, you typically don't want to write this as the spec of the append function. You want to write that it takes a proper list and another proper list and gives you back a proper list. So the specs fundamentally have to have more information than what dialyzer infers. Then, you know, of course, in this case, it's very easy for dialyzer to find out that if you're calling it with something that it's not part of the spec, you are doing something wrong. But in the general case, it's not always easy to find for the dialyzer to find with certainty that there is a discrepancy in your code base. So in those cases that it doesn't find it with certainty, it will just keep silent.
So does this tie in with the this is making me think of the other toe stub that happens a lot of times, and that's when you start over-specifying, when you put specs that are actually more restrictive than what the code is and then the warnings that come from there.
Right. So you typically want to have specs. So the specs are ways of documenting your intentions. And they are ways of documenting your intentions in a form that a sufficiently sophisticated tool can check for discrepancies. So dialyzer is comes close to that, but it's not terribly sophisticated. So there are some cases that it will not detect discrepancies.
Is there work ongoing to make it do more stuff?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we have a version that we never integrated, more powerful than the one that is in OTP. But of course, it also takes more time to do the analysis. So there is a trade-off. Whether it will end up in OTP one day or not, it's not so clear right now. But of course, you can make something better than what Dialyzer has today. But still, you know, you.
One thing I found it very useful for is from time to time when you need to delete a module, if you delete the interface functions from that module and then recompile and run Dialyzer, it'll tell you all the places that you're calling those functions so you can then go and find them and get rid of them.
This is true. But although this is not the most sophisticated way that you can use Dialyzer.
No, but it's useful.
It's clearly something that's very useful.
It's you know, it's one of those. I had the tool handy. I was using it for other stuff. It was just an obvious thing to do.
Yes. So Dialyzer assumes that you give it a full code base. It will tell you whenever it finds functions or types that you haven't given as part of the files that you analyze. So because of that, it's very easy to detect discrepancies like the one you mentioned.
Right. So what was the original inspiration to, you know, to build it? I mean, how did you sort of come up with the idea? What was the sort of genesis of this project?
So we have to go back to 2002. This was a time where I had a PhD student called Tobias Lindahl, who actually was the main developer of Dialyzer back then, who we were experimenting with static analysis in general. So the idea was that we will do something that hasn't been done before, to aim for an analysis that is sound for defect detection rather than sound for correctness, meaning that we'll aim for no false positives. So we'll start with types, but we'll do a type inference as opposed to plugging in a static type system on top of Erlang. And we'll see how far we can push this. So initially we thought that actually this is, since nobody else has taken that road, that this was probably a bad idea because we are not going to find that many type errors. But it's really amazing how many bugs we were able to discover with relatively simple analysis. So since then, the nice way of this, of what we did, is that we could gradually refine and make the analysis stronger and stronger and detect even more bugs, while always keeping this no false positive property. So the idea was to try an analysis from the other direction, as opposed to the direction of plugging in first the static type system and telling some programmers that, hey, your program is not correct because it doesn't satisfy the constraints that my static type system imposes on the language. So try not to change the language, but try to find bugs.
And what features are you guys cooking up down there in the lab for the next version of Dialyzer?
To tell you the truth, we are not really doing that much work these days on Dialyzer because the project is relatively mature. It works well. We spent a significant amount of effort last year in parallelizing Dialyzer. And there is a nice paper, I think, that people who are interested in using Erlang as a parallel language should probably read to see our experiences in what worked well.
One of your students gave a talk at EUC about that, right?
Yes. Stavros Aron is one of my students, one of my current PhD students, gave a talk about this, and we have co-authored the paper on this subject also. So either watch Stavros' talk at the latest EUC. I think there is even a video these days.
There is a video. It's on
Or if you like to read the paper, you can. I'm sure you can find the paper on Stavros' homepage. I can send you a link to include on the podcast also. Yeah. Yes, so we were actually able to achieve very good speed ups. So on a server we have in the university, or actually these days even on my laptop, we can build the PLT of most libraries, Erlang OTP libraries, in something like less than 2 minutes, when previously it took more than 20-30 minutes. Mm. So if you have a machine with many cores, you can fire up HTOP or some other similar tool, and you will see all the cores working pretty much all the time.
On our project, my MacBook Air puts all 4 cores to about 100% for almost a full minute.
Yes. So we contribute to global warming these days. But
probably not very much.
Not very much.
So for a lot of Erlang projects now, if you send them a pull request, if it doesn't pass Dialyzer, they won't approve it.
Yes, I think these days it doesn't make sense to have medium or big-sized Erlang project or application, library, whatever you want to call it, that doesn't run Dialyzer as part of its continuous integration process. So I very much recommend to people to add a Dialyzer call in their make files, so that this is automatically done every time you do a major change or a check-in in your code base.
Yeah, I believe both Travis and Jenkins will run Dialyzer for you without any problem.
Yeah.
Question. So you're coming along on a code base that is just bare, and there's no sort of spec or type declaration. There's there's the tool Typer. Could you tell us a bit about that and the dangers of it, or if you just fully recommend going hog wild with it, down that path?
So this is also a very, very good question. Obviously, if you have a code base that you have developed some years ago, or even if you have developed just by reading one of the Erlang books out there, chances are that your code base will not have that many specs. It might have the occasional few, but it will not have that many. So to make the transition easier, we have done two things. One is create a tool called Typer that actually is just the front end of Dialyzer. So it's not really a very sophisticated tool. It's just something that knows how to ask Dialyzer politely about the type information it infers. So Typer has options that it can automatically annotate your code base with specs. Mm-hmm. But these specs that it finds out are the weakest possible ones. They are the ones that Dialyzer will infer.
Yes.
If you remember the append example, it will, if you have an append-like function in your code base, it will just generate the spec for you that the first argument is a list, the second argument is any term, and the return type is any term. So you probably don't want to leave those specs in your code base. You want to go there and refine them.
Uh-huh.
And you can do that gradually. You can start with Typer if you want, and you can gradually refine the specs that Typer has automatically put in your code base for you. Now, that's one way of doing it. The other way, which is the one I actually prefer, even though I'm one of the authors of Typer, is to start compiling with a Beam compiler option that says, warn missing spec.
Okay.
So what warn missing spec will do is it will warn for modules that have exported functions without specs.
Yes.
So easily you can just find out all the places in your code base where you have an exported function, presumably part of an API of a module, that doesn't have a spec. And you can gradually add these.
The problem with that, the reason I'm not using that is because I'm using the mixer library, which is basically gives you a mix-in functionality to pull in sort of common code into for web machine, export specs, and I haven't quite figured out how to make it do that. You know, I haven't had the time to hack into it yet and try to make it do that. So all the there's half a dozen functions per API module that you pulled in that way.
Right, but you can do that gradually. So you can
it's just that they're
doing that every time you change a module, for example.
Right. No, it's just that this is the functions aren't even there. They're just being inserted by a pre-process a parse transform. That's sort of my. Okay. I haven't figured out how to make that work yet. So
okay, but presumably this only affects a small percentage of the modules that you have in your code base.
Something like that. Besides the obvious, is there any other ways that people can use Dialyzer that would be sort of particularly interesting? You know, what can we do with it might not have thought of already?
Ah, here is a good one. So Dialyzer comes with a lot of options. And you can read the fine manual to find out all these options. But one of my favorite ones is something which is off by default and not on, is something called warn unmatched returns. So what this option does is it flags all the places where a function returns more than one value, and you are not matching on this. So a typical example of this is all the file functions. So these functions either return OK if the file is opened correctly and you can read from it or something like that, and return error, typically with an error indicator, when things go terribly bad. Notice that they don't throw exceptions. They just return errors. So it's typically the case that in most Erlang code bases I've seen, people don't check for that. So Dialyzer will flag you all these places where you are calling effectively a non-void function and you are not doing anything with the return value. In my opinion, you should fix this. Now, unfortunately, these are a lot of places, and this is actually the reason why this option is off by default. But you should gradually fix this, and you will remember me when you find bugs lying there.
Yeah, I'm actually in the process of doing that. There are about 10 or 15 in my code base that meet that description, I think.
So Dialyzer is a tool that if you start using it the way it should be used, it will make you a more disciplined, a better programmer.
One thing I've noticed since I started using Dialyzer is some of my functions, I suddenly don't feel the need, you know, obviously some places I still do, but some places I've just writing fewer unit tests because it just, you know, if the code is really obvious, Dialyzer will catch any of the same problems the unit tests would and do it a lot less work on my part. You know, so I don't know what sort of the wisdom on that is.
I generally like unit testing, but so I don't think that Dialyzer is really a substitute for this. We are not going to cover it in this podcast, but there is another tool that I've been partly responsible for called Proper, which actually has a way of taking your specs and automatically generating random tests from the specs. So in this respect, it allows you to write less unit tests because if you have put the specs that Dialyzer has sanitized for you, then you can generate more random tests automatically.
We will have you back at a future episode to talk about that, because I think that deserves its own an episode all by itself. So.
Yeah,
put that aside to a future day, but we definitely want
to. It'd be pretty neat to have you with on Proper, and then John Hughes, and then other people that have been in that space. That'd be really, really cool to have just a panel.
I don't think we're going to run out of topics to talk about on podcasts anytime in the next ever.
Yeah,
We seem to be we're recording this on the 2nd of September, and the calendar for the podcast is booked into the end of November at this point. So, you know, we're 3 months out.
Question: I'm curious if you're familiar with TypeScript. There are all these different attempts on JavaScript side of adding type systems on top, and TypeScript seems to be one that I think a lot of people were skeptical of as before it released, and then and they're like, "Wow, this is actually pretty good." I wonder if you've had a review of it or if you've looked at it, and if there's anything to steal from what they've done, or if they haven't, you know, just kind of curious if you've had a look, and then what your take would be.
I'm afraid I have not looked at it so closely that I can say something publicly right now.
Okay,
I think. There is clearly a lot of effort going on in typing or taming or however else you want to say it, to call it JavaScript. JavaScript is a language that's a bit special, let's say it this way.
It has some wonderful bits and some really not so wonderful bits.
Yeah. There is on the other hand, it's used. It's used seriously out there.
I wrote a book on it.
That's the line that
about imposing a type system to a language after the fact is that you will always have some programs that the type system will tell you, no, you cannot do that. And previously you could do that.
Uh-huh.
And in 95% of the cases, what you were previously doing or something that you shouldn't be doing. But then there is the other 5% of the cases where you really know what you're doing and the type system just stands in your way. So I don't know whether TypeScript is... What is this percentage for TypeScript? Is it less than 5%? Is it more than that? If it's less than 5%, then it's a very good attempt. If it's more than that, it's a problematic case.
So the other thought I had about Dialyzer was, has the idea been sort of taken and used by people in the space of other languages, in, you know, Ruby or Python or any of the other dynamic languages that, you know, also may have similar, you know, that might benefit from that? Has anybody else, you know, used the idea for something else?
Yes. Actually, I was in January. There was at a major international conference. There was a talk that I think it was very heavily influenced in what we have done with success typings and Dialyzer, and was basically taking the view that. For no false positives, that people actually really need something like that in big projects. Now, these were researchers from a very big software company that I will not mention. I was a bit surprised to see that they were basically arguing for a Dialyzer type of static analysis tools. So I think it's influencing not so much dialyzer per se, because it's very specific to Erlang. That's what the ER at the end stands for. But the idea of capturing success of functions and over-approximating there, what you can do with these functions is influencing other languages out there.
Well, improve our overall code quality is, to my mind, a good thing. For JavaScript, there is Doug Crockford's JSLint, which is also a rather opinionated type static analysis tool for JavaScript.
Right. That's exactly, sorry to interrupt you, that's exactly the opposite of what Dialyzer does.
Right.
So the Lint-like tools, they were very good attempts, but they never aimed for no false positives.
This is true. And the truth is about JSLint, it certainly keeps you away from some things like the with statement in JavaScript, which you should never use. But it also keeps you away from some stuff in JavaScript that, like the plus plus operator, which, well, Douglas Crockford says you shouldn't use because for, you know, what you could almost call aesthetic reasons. I happen to agree with him. But it's not that it'll cause you the runtime to do something weird. It just, you know, his opinion is it makes the code less readable, which is also, you know, something you should keep in mind, obviously. But it's sort of a slightly different... It's answering a different set of questions. So not surprisingly, it does it differently. So, but...
The question I had was, in the community, do you have any sort of call to the community to say, hey, it would be nice if people contributed this, like some extra tools around Dialyzer, some extra tools to, you know, front ends? Or are there any sort of projects that you've thought would be nice to be out there, but... you just don't have the time to knock out now?
Boy, that's also a very, very interesting question.
Because SpawnFest will be coming around sometime.
This will change a bit the subject, but you might find it surprising, but about a year ago, we were desperately looking for big size applications that we could use as benchmarks, especially scalability benchmarks, meaning applications that you need to measure how well they behave when you increase, say, the number of cores, the number of schedulers, or the number of nodes you have available. So one thing that I would very much like the community to do is to have applications like Cowboy or MochiWeb or things that are important applications for the Erlang community come not only with unit tests but also with some sort of performance tests. So that, you know, it gives inspiration to virtual machine implementers to look at these and possibly improve the Erlang virtual machine or come up with different implementations. And it gives inspiration to people that write compilers or improve the language to add either optimizations or language constructs that specifically target real-world applications as opposed to Fibonacci type of benchmarks.
Yeah, the Fibonacci benchmark always struck me as a little bit, kind of pointless. I mean, how often do you actually need a Fibonacci sequence? And I'm sure somebody's going to comment on this. I used one last Tuesday.
Right. Especially written in this way that is exponential,
right,
as opposed to a formula, which
would make much more sense. Yes, you could do a tail recursive version, which would run in constant space and linear time. I should point out at this point that I am working on a book. You can find it on GitHub called Testing Erlang. It will have a chapter on Dialyzer which isn't exactly testing, but kind of falls into the same general space. So that's,
That's cool, man. I didn't know about that.
Yeah. I'll send you a link. I'll put the link in the show notes. But you can. Cool. The book is open source. It will be published by O'Reilly when it's done. But you can. It'll also be free under some sort of license, probably Creative Commons. I haven't quite figured that out yet. But you can find it. Testing Erlang Book is the name of the repo under my account on GitHub. And if anybody wants to read it, it's very much a work in progress. It's, you know, fairly early. Has not been through editing. I'm still writing. That being said, feel free to send me a pull request. It can be anything from fixing a spelling mistake to, you know, a whole chapter. And if you have, and if I haven't covered something in that book, well, it just hasn't come up with in my project yet, in one of my projects, because it's sort of being one of those, as I figure stuff out, I write it down kind of works, at least in part. But it will have stuff on Dialyzer and Proper and unit testing and CI and probably performance testing as well. So, yeah, it's coming out. It'll be fun. So that's, I'll put a link in the show notes.
Cool.
So I just want to finish with announcements and then we'll go to the picks. So a few things. First of all, Erlang Factory Lights. New York will probably be done by the time you get this, because we're running a couple. We're recording a few weeks in advance, but Chicago is coming up. On hold on, let me just get the date. Chicago is coming up on on the 4th of October. Berlin will be on the 16th of October, and then Tel Aviv will be on the 23rd of October. There, if you look at the show notes, there'll be a discount. Probably you can get a discount code for Chicago and Berlin. And if you use the discount code Mostly Erlang at Tel Aviv, you can get in for free. And if you don't use the discount code, you still get in for free because it's a free conference. Tel Aviv is for free thanks to Google, who has a wonderful space in Tel Aviv. It's a full store of a high-rise building that they allow the tech community to use. So many thanks to Google for that.
Yeah, that is cool.
And then Erlang Factory San Francisco Bay, March 3rd to 7th, 2014. It's a little bit out, but if you're traveling from far away to San Francisco, I guess, you know, helps to plan in advance. So that's what's coming up.
And again, I always like to put in the plug for Erlang Camp Nashville. That's October 11th and 12th. And if y'all haven't made it to one of the Erlang camps, you just have to go to one at least. you don't get your little patch that you can put on your Erlang jacket until you've been to an Erlang camp. And so there's one coming up in Nashville. The one in Amsterdam is just finished up though. So
yeah, I saw some of the pictures. It looked amazing.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So, we got some picks. Kostas, you got some cool stuff to share?
Since we are announcing possible venues that you can meet Erlang developers, there is actually the Erlang workshop coming up in Boston for those that will be in the area on the 28th of September, if I'm not mistaken. In the same week, I will be hosted by Basho, and there will be an informal air lounge together with organized by Basho in Boston.
Please put some links in for both of those, and we'll put them in the show notes.
Yes.
Basho is good. Some of their folks have been on the podcast before, so. Brian, you got anything good?
Yeah, I've been looking at, been following this character for a long time. You all might know him. I might have bumped into him, but he's in Portugal in Braga at the University of Minho, I think is the name. But his name is Carlos Baquero, believe I got the pronunciation right, on Twitter is XMAL. And you can go from there to his, he's at, you know, the university, and series of white papers that are just brilliant. And I keep on fumbling, I keep on bumping into these, and I'll read something new, and I you know, it just gives so many ideas of things to implement. And so he's got papers on interval tree clocks, all sorts of distributed computing things. So he's at the distributed computing PhD program there, I gather. I believe he's a professor there, or but anyway. I'll send the link to the papers, and they're all great. And do you all happen to know Carlos?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, well, this will be your chance to get to know at least this side of him. I follow him on Twitter, but there's not a lot of interaction back and forth other than like just reading his PDFs, and they're all just brilliant. So it's a real treasure chest there.
All right. So I've got a couple. I got like three this week. The first is I've been teaching a friend of mine to program, and I was just trying to explain different sorting algorithms. And I'd come across a while back this some groups, and I think they're in Romania at a university there that I'm not even going to try to pronounce. But they have illustrations of various algorithms for sorting illustrated as folk dance. So they have quick sort, bubble sort, merge sort, and they're called the algorithmics. And if you've ever wanted to see a bunch of people dance a quick sort or a bubble sort or whatever, you can now do that. And if you
Nice.
Wanted to see that... you're not sufficiently geeky, I guess, or something. The other one was a map. Somebody took the U.S. Census data and they the demographic data, and they created a map overlay on Google Maps where they plotted it out one dot per person across the entirety of the United States, colored by ethnicity. So black and white people in blue, black people in green, Asians in red, Hispanic in sort of an orange color, and other in sort of a brown. And you can really see, you know, for some cities, like Cambridge, Massachusetts, actually looks pretty, I'm looking at Boston right now. Cambridge actually looks pretty mixed, which is unlike some places like Detroit and Philly both look very, very, Detroit especially, it's like there's a street, and it's just like on one side of it, one race, and one side of it, the other, and it's just truly, you know, sort of shows you sort of that, sort of brings it into contrast. I mean, like, you, I think if you've been in the state, lived in the States, you know, there are groups tend to, you know, concentrate by ethnicity, but you sort of didn't realize how much until you sort of looked at this map. So it's kind of cool. And then there was another one, which was at Forbes. As people probably know, I do live in Israel. And the Israel-Palestinian conflict is never far from our minds. Occasionally, we wish it was. You know, we sometimes wish it was, but it was, but it's not. And basically, but the truth is, there was an article in Forbes recently about how Israeli startups and Palestinian startups are actually sort of quietly working together and doing some cool stuff. And why this article really pissed off some people that they published it and created a big bit of chaos because apparently people didn't want to admit this. But it is in fact the case. So those are my three picks, and I'll place the links will be in the thing, in the show notes. So the next podcast will be Brian is going to be hosting. I will be off due to Rosh Hashanah. I will not be here, and we're going to be talking about RabbitMQ. So that should be like pretty interesting. And then after that, we have coming up on the calendar. We've got some other great stuff. We've got RIAC 4 coming up. Following that. Concurix, Elixir, the Industrial Erlang User Group, and a lot of other good stuff. So, yeah, there's lots of good stuff. And once again, if you have a question for the one of the podcasts and you know want to know something about it, if you go to the user account Mostly Erlang on Skype and leave a voicemail, as long as the audio quality is decent, or you can also just send us email or email an MP3 or something. We will play it as part of the show and talk about it. And we're trying to arrange some swag. So if you do that, you might get a free something. So, you know, it's not going to be a free trip to EUC in Stockholm. It'll probably be more like a sticker or an ebook, but something.
My suggestion. For all these projects, like say RabbitMQ or something like that. They should open source some use cases, some scenarios that can be used as benchmarking. You know, I think it's important for the community and it's important for them.
That's a good idea. All right, so there's a call. Call for a project. If anybody's looking for one, come up with some use cases and benchmark them. And see what we come up with. We'll probably do an episode on performance testing at some point as well. It's not in the schedule, but we will do it. So, all right, guys, thanks very much.